Anyway, what I'm going to be talking to you about, and I hope it's somewhat helpful, isn't so much what we've done with Special Olympics, Lions Club International, Opening Eyes, but how do you start a global vision program? And that's what we've become, a global vision program that now is actually in 82 countries. So we're going to be talking about the little pieces you have to put together to make that happen. So the name of our program is Special Olympics, Lions Club International, Opening Eyes. We're part of the Healthy Athlete Initiative. Actually, we're one of the founding two programs of Healthy Athletes. And it's a model for screening and correction of refractive error. So what happened in 1989 is I was on the American Optometric Association Sports Vision Section, and we did a lot of work with professional athletes, and we actually used to do a thing. They used to have this thing called the Olympic Sports Festival, and we used to check all the Olympic athletes or pre-Olympic and non-Olympic years. And what happened was they stopped doing that, and I was on the board, and I said, rather than work with professional athletes, for those of you who've worked with professional athletes, I mean, it's kind of like fun and good ego, but I've never quite understood why I'm examining their eyes and they're doing me a favor. And that's really how it is. And, you know, I've worked with quite a few professional teams in the New York area. Anyway, so I came up with an isolated, nice idea, which why don't we work with Special Olympics? And that was when my life changed. And what I did is I put a little article in the AOA News and asking people to volunteer. So they paid their own way. They came to Minneapolis for the 1991 World Summer Games. And actually, if you ever do get a chance to go to a Special Olympic event, you really want to. But the World Games, they filled up the Metrodome with 60,000 or 70,000 people, and they were celebrating people with disabilities. And I just came back from Shanghai, as Jeff said, and they filled up 85,000 people, including Hu Xintao, who was the most powerful person in China. And the people they're celebrating are people with intellectual disabilities. It's really a nice place to visit and a nice place to go. So anyway, at the 91 Summer Games, I put out a little article in the AOA News, and all these people volunteered, all these nice people volunteered, to come and pay their own way to be there. And so these are the founders, and what we did is we did a screening. And Special Olympics really didn't know what to do with us. It was a sports program. It wasn't a health program. But one of the things I've learned in life, when there's a big void, eventually something's going to fill it. And there was really a void in terms of providing health services for people with intellectual disabilities. And Special Olympics, since then, has begun to fill that void. But I'm not a big person for doing things that don't impact lives. So at that screening, we documented an unmet need. But all we did was give people a piece of paper and nothing changed. So, except we killed a couple of trees. So so instead of doing that, in 1995, which is 4 years later, and they run like the other Olympics. I don't call them the real Olympics. I call them the other Olympics every 4 years, winter and summer. We added eyewear, and we actually added refractions. We got people to donate lenses and frames, and we actually gave out glasses. And we found, which was very interesting, that the prevalence of uncorrected refractive error is the same for athletes from Zimbabwe as from New Hampshire. So we find these people are universally neglected. Just as an aside, and it's particularly interesting for people in public health, I was at the World Games in Ireland, and the Minister of Health from France was there. And he saw our program, and it's pretty impressive. And they said, that's very nice, but we don't need this in France, because we take care of these people in our culture. You know, we really have great health services for people with intellectual disabilities and all people. So I said, why don't we go, and we have this HAAS system, where we enter data, so we have real-time data. So we just brought them over to the computer room, and we found that the prevalence of uncorrected vision problems is the same for French athletes as they are for other athletes. So we find that people with intellectual disabilities are universally neglected in the developing and the developed world. So we decided we wanted to make a change, and we started giving out glasses. So why do we do it? We needed to collect data to show that we were doing something meaningful. And we find that 33% fail eye health, about a third of them need immediate attention, 65% were not examined in the previous 3 years, 26% are not seeing 20/40, and 37% of the athletes we saw needed a change or replacement of new glasses. So if you go to a Special Olympic event, it's pretty reasonable wherever you go, one out of three of those athletes need a different prescription, and one out of six have some type of health problem. So we defined our mission. What happened was is that Sergeant Shriver, he's the founder of the Peace Corps, and I came to a meeting after Connecticut, and I was still thinking about this isolated good idea. And we had a meeting with Eunice and Sergeant Shriver and the leadership of Special Olympics. And it was before PowerPoint. I was doing slides. And in the middle of the slide, Sergeant Shriver stopped me. And I was taken aback. He said, stop. I was never stopped before in the middle of a presentation. And I said, did I say something to offend you? He said, no, I heard enough. And he got right in my face and he said, Paul, I want you to tell me what to do to make people with intellectual disabilities around the world see better. And I don't care how much money it costs. So he showed incredible leadership. I was thinking about an isolated good deed, and he created really the vision program. So Sue Danberg, who was the first clinical director, and I felt very empowered. These little people from Brooklyn and Connecticut are now, we're going to make the whole world see better with intellectual disabilities, some of the most neglected people on the planet. And we wrote up a 5-year, $2 million plan. And we really worked on it. And then we sent it to Sergeant Shriver. He called us back to Washington. And he said to me, I said, how'd you like the plan? He says, I tell you, I've read a lot of plans. I used to run the Peace Corps. He says, this is really very well thought out, one of the best plans I've ever read. So I said, that's very flattering. Where's the check? And he said to me, no. I just wanted you to think without the restrictions of money. But I don't have $2 million for you. He says, but we're going to get the money. I was a little nervy and a little disappointed. I said, you know, my experience is people who have money think it's very easy to get money. My experience hasn't been that. $2 million is an awful lot of money. So the story proceeds. And anyway, he stopped us, so that's our mission, make people with intellectual disabilities around the world see better. Pretty simple, pretty succinct, and we've been pretty focused on it. So 1997 is the next World Games. And Jeff, just let me know how I'm doing time-wise, because I have a lot of stories. But anyway, in 1997 it's the World Games, and Special Olympics makes the decision that it was in Toronto. If anybody comes to Toronto, they'll put them up in a hotel. So I reserved rooms on my credit card. I think it was something like 800 room nights. We had quite a few students from Illinois College of Optometry came, and it was, I think we had 60 or 70 volunteers to do the screening, and there's no money. So I called up the person who's my contact in Special Olympics, and I said, Tom, you know, they're going to release the rooms. It's 2 weeks before the event. I think this is over my credit limit. You know, I don't have this kind of money. I love Special Olympics, but I really can't make that kind of donation. And he said to me, don't worry, I'm going to church with Mrs. Shriver. So I said, Tom, I really respect your faith in prayer, but I never knew anybody to pray for money and get money. Well, Mrs. Shriver goes to church 3 times a day. She's always looking for somebody to go to church with. So Tom went to church. He spoke about the dental program, the vision program, and Mrs. Croc, who's Mrs. McDonald's, gave Special Olympics $100,000 and said, when you need money and you don't know where to get it and you don't have to recognize me, just use it. So actually, Healthy Athletes, to a large extent, has some gratitude to McDonald's and Mrs. Croc, certainly. Anyway, so we have our mission statement, to improve the quality of life for people with intellectual disabilities by optimizing their vision, eye health, and vision skills through quality eye health care for Special Olympic athletes. And these are our founding principles. Vision is crucial to physical, social, and academic development. People with intellectual disabilities are entitled to quality eye care, and we want to be able to transcend all boundaries of race, gender, religion, national origin, geography, and political philosophy. And this is just a picture that really, people with intellectual disabilities, and I can't quite figure out why, but it happens universally, have a tendency to bring out the best in all of us. So this, for example, is the first time black and white optometrists and ophthalmologists and male and female ophthalmologists in South Africa ever worked together. The South African Optometric Association was very white African. And under the banner of Special Olympics, everybody worked together. And I've been in countries all over the world. And a lot of times you might think the optometry ophthalmology thing is bad here. I mean, you go to some countries and it's really, really bad. And these guys hate each other and they're both volunteering for the same program. And by the end of the Special Olympic event, they're working together. It's really a nice thing to see. So we demonstrate the importance of quality eye care, providing experiences and knowledge to eye care professionals, and we obviously want to increase access to eye care services. In 1997, Special Olympics in Toronto, at that event, they decided to take us over. They didn't like this fact that there was Special Olympics opening eyes, which I was running off of a file cabinet in my office, and they actually officially took us over, and they changed the logo, which my wife designed. But our goal was to grow a global vision program. So how do we do that? And that's where I think it's important to talk to a group in public health. How did we grow this program from an isolated good idea? The first thing we had to do was develop a team. I have my strengths. I certainly have my weaknesses. And I found people to really complement those, one of which is your incoming chair, Sandy Block, who was really great in terms of designing the protocols, standardizing them, doing research. The other is Sue, who was at the first meeting, and she's very good in logistics. And the other was, I wasn't very connected at that time globally, was Bob Saddett, who did a lot of intellectual lecturing. So if I needed a clinical director from the UK or from Spain or from Italy, I would just call up Bob and he would know a lot of people who might be interested in this. So this was our initial team. So the first thing you have to do is obviously develop a team. Then you have to design a screening. And we kind of had a screening from the AOA Sports Vision section. In this cell screening, we do intake, take the demographics, get informed consent. We use visual acuities. We use the Lea symbols. We don't ask the athletes if they know the letters or not. I just came back from China. Guess what? The Chinese have a different alphabet than us. This way we can use the same test. It's really a cool thing to see a Chinese ophthalmologist examining a person with intellectual disabilities from Romania. They don't speak the same language, and they can get them to respond to a visual acuity test. But for some reason, in Romania, they couldn't get that done. So it's pretty amazing. So these are our acuities. We obviously do pupillometry. We do stereo vision, RAND.E's, color vision, auto refraction, eye health. And we have the wrong picture here. Then we do intermediate checkout, and we decide if the person needs an eye examination. If the person needs an eye examination, we do a refraction. We have portable refracting units with phoropters. It's amazing how good people outside this country are with trial frames. But for the U.S. program, we actually have phoropter stands and that we bring in, or some companies sometimes donate it. Then we do frame selection. I'll talk briefly about that. Safilo has donated frames and sunglasses for all of our athletes, worth about $9 million a year. And then we do final checkout, where we advise them if they need any follow-up at all. Oftentimes, we'll grind the lenses on site. We have a relationship in the United States with Santinelli. And then we dispense the glasses sometimes right on site, so we can see the gratification. A lot of these people have life-altering prescriptions. One of the things about people with intellectual disabilities, they're very poor advocates for their own health. They don't complain. One of the stories, and I don't know how many eye care practitioners we have in here, we were in Alaska. There's somebody who actually is involved in the optical industry. He has an edging company. He wanted to help us with his edging company. His daughter has Down syndrome. I said, you want to come in? We'll just check your daughter. He says, no, I just had a check by one of the most prominent doctors in Connecticut. So I says, well, you know, maybe doing it, we're not that busy now. Why don't we check it? We'll see. You know, it'll be a good thing. All of a sudden, we found out she had 4 diopters of astigmatism that they corrected 90 degrees. And the father said, yeah, I remember when she got this pair of glasses. She kind of didn't want to wear them. But we kept on saying, wear your glasses, wear your glasses. So that's one of the issues in terms of getting it right. We've actually found that 18% of the athletes wearing glasses are wearing clinically incorrect glasses. So we assume if somebody's wearing eyewear, they're adequately corrected. But in this population, a lot of times they're not. Eye health problems, again, we see 6%. Obviously, we need to train people. We took on a train-the-trainer model where we train doctors, 2-day training they get in how to examine people with intellectual disabilities. These are the trainings we've done all over the world. We now have 261 trained clinical directors in 80 countries. We got funding. We started with a demo in Groningen with $50,000, and now we have 3-year, $3.28 million grant, and we've just got a renewal. Lions Club International Foundation have given us $10 million cash to run this program. So this program doesn't cost Special Olympics anything. It's totally funded by the Foundation of Lions Clubs. They also provide volunteers for us. They've been a great partner for us. That's how one of the ways we get volunteers. Here are Lions, eye care professionals who are working together and having a great time. We needed to get sponsors. We've got over in-kind donations of over $10 million. Safilo is our worldwide supplier of frames and sunglasses. Essilor has polycarbonate lenses. They're on the back of our T-shirts, if you've ever seen any of our Opening Eyes T-shirts. And Liberty provides us with sports frames. In-kind is 17%. That's really an important thing to do if you ever want to start a vision program. Everybody wants to see their money go further. So for every dollar the Lions give us, it really goes five times further to our in-kind donation. We've also tried to get attention and recognition. We've actually been recognized by the APHA Vision Care Section, and this is at the American Academy of Optometry, signing on to the Project 2020 goals. We obviously needed to develop training materials. We have the standardized screening protocols that Sandy did. We have a handbook that Sue did. We have a DVD on how to be a clinical director. And now we've just developed DVDs for our clinical directors to train their trainers. And it's going to be available online, so if somebody wants to volunteer for Opening Eyes, they could go online and get the training needed, and also the doctors can see it. And now, in order to do the screening, you're going to have to see this before it. So we're going to have standardized training for our trainees. We also obviously have to decide what else to do to fulfill our mission. Sandy designed the global curriculum, which has been translated into Mandarin and used in the largest medical school in China and in many optometric colleges and some ophthalmology residencies. We now also have a provider directory. I'm going to pass that out when I'm done. If anybody can help us populate this provider directory, because one of the challenges of people with intellectual disabilities is they don't know where they're welcome to receive health care. So that's something we also decided to do. We did get some results. We've seen over 116,000 athletes. We've given out over 50,000 pairs of eyewear. We've trained almost 7,000 professionals, and we've been in 56 countries. And obviously, we're still growing, thinking, and dreaming to see what we can do, because we found it, and everybody who's been involved in this program has found it incredibly gratifying. I've had a lot of professionals say it's been the most gratifying thing they've done. So I'm part of a team that, as everybody's seen this one, that we hope we can really change the world, because a group of committed people is the only thing that ever can. Thank you.